The Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast joins you once again. We have some interesting baseball developments. The Brewers on Monday headed to Wrigley Field to play game 163. They have tied for first place in the National League Central, finished with an absolute flourish, winning each of their final seven games. They got enough help from the Pirates and from the Cardinals at Wrigley over the weekend. They won three games combined, the opponents did. Cubs still did fine this week, but the Brewers were able to wrestle back into a tie for first place. They now will go and face the Cubs with a chance to win the NL Central, get home field throughout the playoffs. If they lose, they'll be back in Milwaukee on Tuesday night for the National League Wild Card game, a 7 o'clock game, winner take all, winner to the division series, loser goes home. So it's not a fully set playoff experience yet, but the Brewers knocking on the door. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am the host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. I'm going to be joined here in moments by Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak, the two beat reporters for the Milwaukee Brewers. We're going to discuss all of the happenings of the final week of the season. Christian Yelich going on an absolute tear, a crazy final stretch that actually had him flirting for the Triple Crown, in addition to leading a bunch of other stat categories. He finished at least with one game to play that still counts in the stats. He was within one of the overall runs leader. He more than led the league in OPS and some of the peripheral stats like WAR, OPS Plus, WAR for position players. So slugging percentage, he was certainly way out in front. So Christian Yelich, he will be the first Milwaukee Brewers player to win a batting title. He will lead the league in batting average. Left Sunday at 323. The closest guy to him is 310. It's just not going to happen. If he goes 0 for 25 against the Cubs, he would still have the batting title. So that's a done deal. And just a lot of great performances over the past week. We saw the opener employed, that strategy in which you have one reliever start the game, Dan Jennings, on Monday in St. Louis to start the game. Bullpen game, the Brewers won that one. They sweep the Cardinals in St. Louis, get to celebrate in St. Louis with a champagne celebration, and knowing that they were going to the playoffs in some capacity, then they came home and swept the Tigers so that they could actually have a chance to win the NL Central. So in addition to chatting with Tom and Todd, we'll run some audio from Mark Attanasio, the Brewers principal owner, CEO, many titles. He's the top guy, basically. He chatted with the media before Friday's game. He is excited, of course, to see his team headed to the postseason. So wanted to get some of that audio to you as well. And at that point, we didn't even know what the ultimate destination was. Brewers needed some help on Saturday afternoon when the Cardinals beat the Cubs 2-1. And then the Brewers won later that night against Detroit, a very magical night for Christian Yelich, where he hit a couple more home runs. That put them in a position. They were tied at that point, both teams winning on Sunday to set up what we've got now. Want you to find us on Apple Podcasts. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast all season long. You can still find us on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or Stitcher, or Google Play, but on Apple Podcasts, you can give us a rating. Let us know what you think. Give us a review. We need those. That helps us expand our reach, helps us know what you think of us, and we'll definitely take all the feedback we can get. You can also find me on Twitter. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe, J-R-R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E. Let us know what you think. Without further ado, though, let's chat with the two Journal Sentinel beat reporters. This is Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak. We are still sitting at Miller Park in the aftermath of the final game of the 2018 season, or the regularly scheduled final game. The Brewers now know that they are going to be going to Wrigley Field on Monday for a 163rd game to settle the tie for the National League Central Championship and get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So it's a pretty big deal. Curious how you guys think Craig Counsell is going to manage this pitching staff, because you know there's still an opportunity for them to play on Tuesday. They can't be burning their bullpen. They kind of were able to be cautious on Sunday because they were able to get out to a big lead. But now how do you think Craig Counsell is going to operate this game, or is it going to be like any other game where he's going to win and he's going to be throwing Hader, Knebel, and Jeffress out in big situations?
Well, he's told us, JR, that he still knows he's got more than one game to play. It's not an elimination game on Monday, but it will be if they're in the wild card on Tuesday. So I don't think that'll stop him from using a high-leverage guy if they have a lead tomorrow, or several high-leverage guys. But let's face it, he's been pulling his starters early for much of the season, and even earlier than ever in the last month. We did a notebook lead today that's probably going to be online soon and in the Monday paper about how quickly he's pulled starters down the stretch, and put pinch hitters in their place and just gone with bullpen guys as much as he can. And he can do that one more day because we still have the expanded rosters. This is a regular season game. One of the questions we got asked
a lot
today, besides, is my name Tom Hodricord? And not, yes, it is still Tom Hodricord. Is this a regular season game, and do they use the expanded rosters? Yes and yes.
Yeah, I'm glad that's clear. It seems like, and maybe Todd, you can chime in on this. It seems like the big question is Josh Hader. There's always been a careful, there's also always been a plan to use him carefully. He did work in the weekend series. He did struggle and has struggled a little bit. So I don't know if there's going to be a hesitance to use him because they might want him in that elimination game on Tuesday if it comes to pass, or you know, if like, you know, like we get into a situation where there's a couple lefties up if Josh Hader is the guy. But it seems like that's probably the biggest question mark about an individual player facing Craig Counsell for 163.
Yeah, I mean, Craig Counsell said yesterday it's pretty much business as usual with Hader. Obviously, he struggled here in the last week, giving up three homers in three appearances, including two in that first appearance last week. You know, for whatever reason, you know, Craig Counsell urged us to not dive too deep into the numbers or overanalyze the struggles. He's just going through, I guess, a little bit of a rough patch. And you know, all these hitters are major league hitters, including Babe Lugo from the Detroit Tigers, who, you know, guys like that. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens here moving forward. Obviously, he's a big piece of the puzzle at the back end of the bullpen. And if you get into a situation where you've got, you know, you want to key out with Rizzo, you know, coming up late in a game, what do? You know, to me, Hader's still that guy, and you go with him, and you try to win. That's I guess that's the way I would approach it. Maybe Tom looks at it differently, but you know, that's the way I would look at it. This extra day of rest that Hader got today, that Jeremy Jeffress got today, was very big in my opinion. And the 11-0 score was pretty misleading. That big inning late obviously blew the game open, but the job that Gio Gonzalez and Junior Guerra and Jordan Lyles did, really limiting the amount of bullpen arms that the Brewers needed to use today, was pretty big, just to get everybody who pitches in those key situations late an extra day of rest.
If the Brewers win on Monday, they will get a number of perks, not just home field advantage. They won't have to play again until Thursday in the first game of the NLDS. That would be back at Miller Park. If they lose, they'll be back at Miller Park on Tuesday playing either the Dodgers or the Rockies, who have their own one-game playoff to figure out. The loser of that game will face off with Milwaukee in Milwaukee in the winner-take-all wild card game. So we're talking about the future, but the past week has been probably one of the craziest weeks in Brewers history. I mean, they won all their games, 6-0. You saw Christian Yelich put an incredible capper on what was an incredible September. It seems like he's closing in on the MVP and is now even threatening to get the triple crown with stats still counting in this game 163. I guess I'm curious, 5 years from now, Tom, what do you, and I guess Todd too, like what do you think people are going to remember about this last week of the season? Do you think it's going to be Yelich with his brother in the military coming to see him play on Friday, or just the home runs he hit, or the Braun home runs? I mean, what's going to resonate as the end of the 2018 season for Brewers fans?
Well, it's no question the name Christian Yelich is going to come first to mind when the people think about this last week, much like Ryan Braun did in 08 when he kept bopping home runs all the way down to the last game of that season that got him the wild card that year. I think they'll also remember that the Brewers had a tremendous surge to draw even with the Cubs. But if they lose to the Cubs in game 163, then the result will have been the same, second place. And so I just think it's, you know, Yelich, what he's done, it's almost like he's willed himself to hit home runs when he needs to or get big hits when he needs to. There were many, many, many people that use the name Barry Bonds in referring to him, including people who are usually reserved, like Craig Counsell.
Right.
You don't see him drop stuff like that on people very often. And so, you know, if you're going to start saying a guy's hitting the ball like one of the greatest hitters of all time, steroids aside, then that's something that you're going to remember. You know, I also think that because he's new and they traded for him and he just exploded on the scene, he's also been a tremendous kid on and off the field. He's just, you know, right now, everything that's good about baseball And I think he's already like a cult hero for the Brewers fans. He's got four more years before he could even leave.
That's right.
Yeah. I think he could. This could have been a one-year thing, and he'd be revered like C.C. Sabathia was revered in 08.
I think that's a really good comparison to Sabathia, especially with how well they both played down the stretch to get their teams into the playoffs. Todd, what are you going to remember? And is there any chance Christian Yelich is not going to be the MVP? Is there any shred of doubt that Javier Baez could still sneak in there for you?
I think that Yelich is definitely the story for 2018. I mean, we all, those of us who watch him on a regular basis, you know, it was a historic second half, incredible to watch, and like Tom said, an incredible young man. So that to me is going to stick out. The other thing that I would point out is just, you know, obviously with a game to go, the Brewers have won 95 games this year. You know, let's read Brewers Twitter 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, you know, 6 weeks ago. People were, you know, oh, we're not going to make the playoffs. We're not going to do this. Our pitching staff stinks. They won 95 games, second most in franchise history, with a starting rotation that really does not wow anybody, you know, at least going by names. It's been a bullpen. It's been a terrific job offensively over the course of the season. Yes, of course, there have been ups and downs. But 95 wins is certainly nothing to sneeze at. So as far as the MVP balloting goes, I don't have a ballot this year. But if I did, I would vote Christian Yelich, no question about it. A month ago, I was glad that I didn't have an MVP ballot because it becomes kind of like homework and brain surgery, the amount of time that we put into trying to put together a representative ballot and a fair ballot that you know, gives everybody, you know, basically a fair shake as to what they did in the course of the regular season. You know, Javi Baez obviously was playing really well at that point, Matt Carpenter, but Yelich in my eyes has just completely run away with it. And you know, Bob Nightingale, one of our colleagues, tweeted yesterday that he thinks that, you know, Yelich could be a unanimous MVP. I don't know that I'd go that far. I still think guys like Baez are going to get some votes.
And the pitchers, too, DeGrom.
Maybe some pitchers, but I still think that Yelich wins it.
I'd be shocked if DeGrom gets a first-place vote, though. There's 10 names on the ballot,
yeah.
And the guy that usually gets the most first-place votes wins. It's going to be 30 ballots. Unless the Russians hack it or all 30 ballots get mismailed to the Baez family, Christian Yelich is going to be the MVP.
Yelich's success the final week of the season, I think, sort of obscured how great Ryan Braun has been down the stretch. He was hitting into a lot of bad luck earlier in the season. He was not hitting into bad luck by the end, and his numbers looked pretty good by the end of 2018. He had two home runs on the 10th anniversary of his famous 2008 home run to get his Brewers into the playoffs. That was on Friday was the day that he hit two more home runs, including the go-ahead shot in the eighth. You know, he does seem to be healthy. He's got a little bit of swagger back. He gave some pretty great quotes after that Friday night game about launch angles and how he is feeling. Have you observed that over the course of the you know, last 2 to 3 weeks that you're seeing a different Ryan Braun and a guy who really is, you know, at peak health and peak confidence?
Well, he's hitting home runs again. You know, he hadn't hit home runs for a long time, and people can debate all they want, you know, the hard hit balls that went into outs, and he's talked about it a lot, and I think there's some statistical evidence to back up those claims. But the one balls that can't be caught are the ones that go on the other side of the wall,
right.
And he used to be very good at doing that, and he has not been so much this season. Now he's got 5 home runs in 1 week. He does have a flair for the dramatic, but he is a guy that if he's got some kind of health issue has never performed very well, and so when he is performing well, you can just assume he's feeling good.
Right. So Todd, there's no blueprint for a one-game playoff or a one-game outcome anyway. And the Brewers have played well against the Cubs lately, and there's no predicting really what's going to come next. What do you think of the Brewers' starting rotation as far as the fact that they have not worked deep into games? They really struggled to get into the sixth inning at that point. Is that something that's going to work against them in the postseason, or because we see so many relievers used in the postseason that maybe the Brewers aren't even a little ahead of the curve because they've been playing this way for weeks now, where starters haven't been as reliant on their rotation? How do you think that figures for the Brewers going ahead?
I don't think we're going to see much different from them moving forward. You know, you probably would want to give the starters a little bit longer leash if they're pitching relatively well, just because you don't have 14 arms in the bullpen anymore once you set your playoff rosters. But, you know, Craig Counsell has kind of given us this blueprint for, you know, months on end now for most of the season, really, and especially here down the stretch. It's going to be, you know, 4 to 5 innings from the starters and then handing it over to his guys in the bullpen. And it's what's worked for the most part. Obviously, you've got to start, you know, as we talked earlier with Hader and other guys, you've got to start weighing the risk-reward as far as rest goes for these guys and not overworking them too much. But to me, it's just going to be pretty much the same thing moving forward. And maybe if you get a guy like Ulys Chacín who gets on a roll early in a game, maybe you can pitch him into the seventh or something like that and go to your bullpen. But otherwise, I don't expect much different.
It'll be a little bit different circumstances for the wild card game as far as roster management goes. You do have to set a 25-man roster for the wild card game, but it's just for that one game. You can completely reset it for the next series. This is another question that you guys get asked a lot. So the wild card game, you figure you're not going to see many starters on that roster. It's going to be kind of a similar vibe to what they've had down in September with I think 38 guys on the roster. But as we get, let's say the Brewers get to that point, either for the wild card game or the NLDS after that, are there going to be any surprises on this roster? There's a lot of guys kind of competing for those last few spots. Are there going to be guys that we kind of are just assuming are going to be part of this postseason that maybe aren't going to be part of the postseason rosters?
Well, the players who were added on July 31st and August 31st have thrown, you know, many more names into the hat. Mm-hmm. Moustakas, Scope, Cedeno, Granderson, Gonzalez, Soria. So, yeah, some guys are going to get left out. Is there a way for Eric Thames to make the roster? If Granderson makes the roster, it doesn't look like it. And Domingo Santana is great at pinch hitter as he's right. been. Is there a spot for him? Can you keep Hernan Perez and Scope? Perez has been so good as a versatile player. Scope has not done a whole lot in general since they picked him up from the Orioles. You know, the pitching staff's going to completely change from the wild card to the division series if they move forward, because in the wild card being a one-game winner-take-all, you only need one starting pitcher, and the rest of them are going to be maybe a couple of long relievers
right.
and then all high-leverage guys. So a whole bunch of relievers are going to get left off that roster, and then when you get to the series, a division series, if you move forward, you need some more starting pitchers, so that means less relief pitchers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, some guys are going to get left off. You know, they have way, you know, Mark Attanasio has a great phrase for something like that. I love this phrase. He calls it a high-class problem.
Yes, I suppose.
And that's a high-class problem.
I'm curious what you guys think. What do we make of Chase Anderson right now? He did not start on Monday as originally scheduled in St. Louis. The team went with a bullpen game. Of course, famously started with Dan Jennings to get one out, and they wound up winning the game as they have won all their games in the final week of the season. But is Chase Anderson just out of the mix at this point? I mean, certainly the playoffs, there's going to be an opportunity to use him, but it seems like the team, you know, maybe could have gotten him a start in the Tiger series and elected not to do so. Where are they at with him, do you think, Todd?
It's interesting. I don't think we really know at this point. We haven't been told, and we had a pretty interesting discussion with Chase this morning before the game, and to his credit, he's been professional about it. He's keeping a stiff upper lip and understands this time of year it's all hands on deck, and who's performing best is going to get the most opportunities. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where they see he fits in, if he fits in. You know, do you just hit reset with him and start, you know, worry about him next year? I don't know. It's very interesting. The Brewers have been playing their cards very close to the vest with several things, and this is one of those where we just really haven't gotten many answers at this point, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do moving ahead with him. Tom, do you have any more insight on that?
Well, I mean, they've given him a resounding vote of no confidence, right?
Right.
So what are you going to reverse that now and ask him to also get his mental game? His mental game has to be shut down right now, in my opinion. I don't see him throwing any more pitches this year. The interesting thing will be how they kiss and make up before next spring.
Right. You know? Yeah, because he's obviously under contract next year. He figured into that rotation at least. Until recent events, pretty prominently. So that's an interesting development for sure. I won't ask you guys to make any predictions about who's going to win these games. It seems like that's such a fool's errand when you're talking about small samples like this. But here's one I want you to try to make. Give me your prediction for the Unieski Betancourt Award for Unlikely Postseason Hero, so named for the guy who somehow had a really good playoffs in 2011 despite struggling most of the year. Who's the guy that's going to come up in a big spot that's going to surprise people and be remembered forever?
I'm going to go with Babe Eric Kratz.
Yes, that's a good pick.
I just think he's a great story, 38-year-old journeyman. It'll be interesting to see if he starts game one, but he's never played an inning in a postseason game during his career. He was on the Royals roster, postseason roster in 2014. Never got in because of Salvi Perez. But he's had some big hits for the Brewers this year, and he will occasionally pop one over the fence, surprising some people, but is capable certainly of singling in a run here or there, but would not surprise me in the least if he came up with some big play offensively or defensively as well at some point to positively impact the game for the Brewers.
Tommy, I'm going with Christian Yelich.
he's not a Unieski Betancourt Award winner. He's just an MVP doing his thing.
Well, if Scope makes the roster, I'm going to throw his name out there. But I don't know if he's going to make the roster. But, they traded for him because he has done things in his big league career. He hasn't done much since he's been here. But I wonder if the pressure will just come off of him if they put him on the postseason roster and put him out there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, not knowing if he's even going to be on the roster, I'm going to go with him. Because the other guy, Kane would not be a surprise. Braun would not be a surprise. Yelich would not be a surprise.
Right.
Shaw would not be a surprise. Moustakas would not. Arcia would be, but I don't know what his offensive capabilities are being a surprise.
Yeah, I love the Kratz pick. He hits everything hard, and a lot of it's on the ground. And he's not going to, he's not going to hit 275, but he's... He's solid contact, great pitch framer. You see him work with Davies and Miley a lot, and he's able to get a lot of calls, and that's very been underrated. Kind of a story we haven't talked about is how he's sort of risen to the point where he is the starting catcher. Him and Manny Pena are co-starting catcher. It's not really a starter-backup situation anymore. Pretty impressive for a guy that kind of just plucked from the Yankees for Wendell Rijo in the middle of the season.
Plus, a 38-year-old career backup, mostly minor leaguer. There's nothing to predict what he's doing this year.
Right.
There was no reason to do that. He's one of the biggest surprises on the team. And as you noted, he's like catcher 1A now.
Yeah. About to get his first postseason appearance in all likelihood.
He was. He'll be happy to tell you he was on the Royals.
Yeah, that's what Todd said, yes.
World Series roster in, 2015 or 14, right?
14.
Never saw the field.
Yes.
Somebody named Salvi Perez got all the action.
Yeah,
Imagine that.
Salvador Perez was very important for those 14-15 Royals. Just as a general thought, and there's going to be a lot of time to reflect on the season, but 95 wins, I don't know if even the most optimistic of people thought this was going to happen. We talked that they were trending ahead of predictions even last week, but to close with 6 wins, really hitting the gas, I think...
7?
Yeah, 7 wins, that's true, the last of the Pirates series. Just really hitting the gas reminds me of that 2011 team that also finished pretty strong. I try to put my finger on exactly why when you see a team that doesn't have dominant starting pitching. Yes, the bullpen is good, yes, the offense is good, but I don't know what this team has that enabled them to threaten the record for most wins in franchise history. It just really surprised me. I don't know how surprised you guys are. You saw them in August, and they were good then, too. Maybe this doesn't come as a shock, but 95 wins is a pretty staggering number in my estimation.
Just a very well-balanced team all the way around. As I talked earlier, the starting pitching, I think, surprised a lot of people. The bullpen obviously was a strength. And then you had guys really kind of coming into their own offensively and having career years, guys like Yelich, guys like Jesus Aguilar. Who could have predicted what he did this year coming out of spring training when we were wondering if he was going to even be on the team? Travis Shaw's average is down a little bit this year, but again, another 30 home run season for him. So there were guys that regressed too. Orlando Arcia, Manny Pena, I wouldn't put him as high on that list, but the Brewers are able
Domingo
to do that.
Santana.
Yeah, Domingo Santana,
sure,
30
yeah.
home run guy last year, who's in the minors most of the year. You're right. So the Brewers won despite guys like that who were expected to take another step forward, taking major steps back. So. Just a very well-balanced team. Everything pretty much worked well together for most of the season. People, of course, love to complain about Craig Counsell's managing and all that stuff, but by and large, it just has been a solid performance from top to bottom by the whole organization this year.
And they are a poster child for analytics.
For
baseball.
Sure. For
poster
sure.
child.
And Counsell, I think, is a really good thing to point out. I mean, he really has used the bullpen in ways that are a little bit non-traditional, and they've worked out. He's set his lineups in ways that have been non-traditional at times. I mean, he definitely seems to be in lockstep with that analytics mentality, and he's been phenomenal.
And he sticks to his guns. He does not veer paths. You know, if he's decided plan A is the right plan and it fails for a few days, he does not go to plan B. He stays with plan A. He sticks to his guns. And I know it infuriates a lot of people because in a way it's managing by the numbers, but that's what baseball is now.
For sure.
It's, like it or not, it's different. And it's just hard to overemphasize that bullpenning is why they are where they are. I mean, they just bullpen you to death.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy Jeffress and Josh Hader both having all-star seasons. Corey Knebel very much improved since he took a brief stint to the minors earlier.
And I'm glad
you
brought him up because there's another guy that got him to 90.
For sure
95.
He did, yes.
You know, would you have thought he was going to return to be a high leverage? He's back to being a strikeout maniac again.
So
I'm glad you mentioned him because Corey Knebel is another humongous reason because some other guys were leaking oil and he jumped in and let them get some rest.
It's true. Corbin Burns, a rookie, he's been a big piece of the puzzle as well. Taylor Williams has been good.
Brandon Woodruff, great September.
Definitely. And Xavier Cedeño, one of those August pickups that we mentioned. The roster tweaks, we mentioned them already, but you can't look past that stuff. They got Mike Moustakas, Jonathan Scope. Granted, he's struggled at times, but he also hit one of the biggest home runs of the year, and he's a guy that they didn't necessarily – it didn't appear that there was a need for a player like him on this roster, similarly in the offseason when they got both Kane and Yelich.
And they also went 5-0 in September in games started by Gio Gonzalez. I think that makes that a successful pickup.
I would say so, yes. He doesn't work deep into games, but he put his team in position each time. He personally 3-0, the team 5-0 in Gonzalez starts. Not too shabby. One last thing before, let's look ahead a little bit. There were a couple guys, this was a pretty minor subplot, I would say, in this last week of the season, but Zach Brown and Corey Ray, the minor league pitcher and player of the year, came to visit the park, got a chance to meet some players before the game, talk to the media. Curious what your prognosis is for these guys. Corey Ray is kind of a controversial prospect in that he has struggled at times and his peripheral numbers aren't all amazing, but he had a great year as far as power goes. He had a really successful campaign in Biloxi, and Zach Brown kind of burst onto the scene. What would you guys expect? Do you think these are guys that could be with the team in 2 years, or do you think it's still a bit of a murky crystal ball for Brown and Ray?
I would just venture a guess and say Brown would be the first guy up just based on the fact that there's always a need for pitching. Corey Ray obviously plays a position where the Brewers are very well stocked at the major league level, and there's really not a lot of room for him at this point. Plus, there is development. There's development for both of those guys, but I think the next step for Corey Ray is just to show that he can be a more consistent hitter. The power is great. The run production is great, but you know, he's just off the top of my head, probably a .235 career hitter in the minors. I know that's, you know, homers are the way the game is going nowadays, but I think, you know, coming up the way he would, you gotta be able to make a little bit more contact than that.
It's also a position of great depth for the Brewers right now, too. There's no clear path for him.
Yeah, and Zach Brown, you know, who knows, if he gets off to a good start next year in San Antonio, you assume that's where he's going to start. Maybe he can be the next Corbin Burns, where you know, you can find a spot for him in the bullpen, get his feet wet that way, and then look, you know, kind of reconsider his path to the majors after that. And, the good thing for the Brewers is that they certainly don't have any shortage of what look to be quality young arms in the system, and who'd ever thought we'd be talking about that. But it's to that point now, so definitely, you know, two guys to keep an eye on and two guys that the Brewers certainly are very excited about moving forward.
Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak. Find all their material at jsonline.com. They've got all kinds of content coming for the postseason, Monday game, Tuesday game, if necessary, and obviously any games beyond that starting Thursday and Friday, the National League Division Series. Thanks, guys. We will be chatting again very soon.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks to those guys. We move now to some audio from Friday night's press availability with Mark Attanasio, the owner of the Milwaukee Brewers, the head cheese. He was in town to take in the final three games of the season with his team as they tied for the National League Central Championship. He's He's had some pretty impressive he's kind of been witness to a pretty impressive turnaround here in just three seasons from really what you would count as the beginning of the rebuild. Maybe that dates back to 2015, but still, 3.5 seasons they've gone from a team that was kind of looking for some direction to one that is going to the playoffs with 95 wins. Again, that's the second most wins in franchise history, one behind the 2011 team that won 96 games. And, you know, technically if they win game 163, that will be 96 wins that will match what they did in 2011. So here's what Mark Attanasio had to say to the media.
When I first bought the team in September of 2004, maybe early October, Wendy Seelig Preve introduced me, and I thought properly it was her press conference, and Seelig said, on the team since 1970, and I would sit there and wave, and she handed me a cap, and I thought at the end of the press conference I would put the cap on, and instead she handed me a cap and said, all right, go get him. What do you mean, go get him? And it was really my press conference, which I didn't know. So I shared with everyone the superstition of I not put anything Brewers on until I knew it was announced, and that was the first time. And someone's mic here.
That's fine. You can just
leave. Yeah. And likewise for the 2018 postseason in the first time. And nothing feels better than that.
Mark, was it tough for you to not be there in the middle of that one's in it?
Yeah, it was very, I was in pretty direct communication with Craig and David, and it was very hard. And as we kept winning games, I wrote to Craig, well, maybe it's good I'm not there. You know, I was there last year in St. Louis when we were eliminated in game 161, and I was in St. Louis in 2011 when ball skipped under Jerry Hairston's glove, and we lost. And so maybe it was good I wasn't there, but it was really hard to not be there when all the celebrating was going on.
Can you set the scene for us where you were and what your celebration was?
Well, I could say two things on that. Everyone knows my wife Debbie is quite. She doesn't take the tension well, so she decided to go out to dinner with a friend. And in fact, she might have gone out to dinner with a friend when, like one of our most clutch players of all time, and I don't think I've seen Ryan Braun drop a ball in 11 years. And he dropped the ball. Boom, she's out. And so I go over to see my mom, and with this, you know, this ridiculous, look at this thing. I am not supposed to put any weight on this thing. No weight bearing at all till mid-October. We're in the eighth inning. Moose grabs the ball, throws it past first. I'm thinking, oh my God. And then we know that play, that the Cardinals pinch runner tripped. And we got him out at home, and I jumped off of the couch and landed on my feet, which the doctor wasn't too happy about, but he said, don't do it again. I said, well, if we can do that again, I'm doing it again. So I was actually watching the game with my mom, who asked me this morning, what's that little Z, that little letter next to our name? Why do we have that in the Cubs every day? I said, that's because we're in the playoffs.
She lives and dies in the Brewers too, right, Mark?
Oh, yeah, she's adopted all the superstitions. She won't get a move from her spot. And none of us do. I moved from my spot depending, and I didn't like what was actually going on in the bottom of the seventh there. That's when I went over to her house is next to mine, and so when we took Josh out for a JJ in, I moved from my kitchen to her kitchen, and that worked out.
Mark, when you brought David in for this rebuild, this change of atmosphere here in Milwaukee, are you even surprised at how quickly he was able to turn around a team into a playoff contender?
Well, it's interesting. So when I called David and I texted David and Craig as soon as we won, I said, look, enjoy the moment and I'll reach out to you guys later. One of the things I said to him, one of the first things was, it's really quite something, because when we were, forget about first having hired him, even interviewing him, And this is the kind of thing we talked about in the interview. How do you get from where we were, which at that point, you know, was pretty low, to today? And, you know, we never talked about timeline. We talked about process and methodology. I told David it was, you know, quite an accomplishment to get, to actually achieve it in whatever timeline. The fact that we actually, and the team, you know, meaning the whole organizational team, were able to achieve that is really, you know, there's 30 teams that want to get into this spot. At any one time, there's any number of teams that are in process of trying to put things back together. And we had two losing seasons, and that was it. And that's pretty incredible.
Does this one feel a little bit different than 2008? You had that 26-year wait to get off of Chennai. 2011 was a big deal. Does this one feel different, though, because of what could follow in the near future, too?
Well, 2008, so the first press conference I had, at the very end, there was someone sitting right over there, where you are, and said, "You won't be so cheery when you've lost 25 years in a row." Just like that. So I don't want to say, you know, there's no reason in making any large public proclamation, but I went over to him after the press conference right in this corner. I said, "Hey, by the way, I have absolutely no intention of losing, period." I was maybe a little naive with that. This is really hard. But, you know, what I've learned over the 14 seasons is every season is different. 2008 was different than 2011, different than 2018 relative to playoff teams, and each enjoyable and stressful in their own way. I think the longer I'm on the team, the more I recognize how special it is, and maybe the more attention I feel. David Stearns, by the way, at this point, he still thinks this is all fun, and that's great. And I always, when I speak to Craig after games and I can see even at tense moments he's smiling in the dugout, I like to see that because, you know, it is a game that is supposed to be fun. As I get older, I'm finding I'm feeling more of the tension and pressure and you know, not being able to enjoy it till the very end.
David told me that, Mark, that when he called you on January 25th and said, "We're getting Yelich and Kane," that you were pretty excited that day. But now when you look at what it has done to the team, like Yelich is already like a phenomenon in town, you know, it's like he's maybe already getting up to like Robin Yount status and the way he's revered here. Dude, could you just talk about what those guys did for the team and his particular push here the last few weeks?
Well, starting with January 25th, we were on a path to sign Lorenzo Cain, which had a typical free agent process. And there were fits and starts in the attempts to trade for Christian Yelich. And, you know, maybe 48 hours before, it looked like they actually were going to converge. And I said to David, "Well, you know, if you get one, do you really need to get both?" And his answer, which was immediate, was, "Well, if I can get one, it just makes me want to get the other one even more." And what I that took a while to process. I understand why it is, especially with their methodology on building, you know, a team around scoring runs and preventing runs on the other side. But that said, what I liked about it immediately is it was really out of the box thinking. And the more he got criticized, and if everybody goes back, he really got criticized. You know, the Brewers, you know, they have, you know, 10 outfielders. And then when we traded for Mike Moustakas, "Oh, the Brewers have 3 third basemen," and a lot of commentary. And, you know, we are in the position we're in because of some of this creative thinking. So, you know, I'm just starting with David. I know it's a little, we'll talk about Christian in a moment, but executive of the year, if he's not the executive of the year, I don't know who is. You know, the two guys, Lowe and Christian, have been a wonderful complement to each other. You have two completely unselfish players. You have two guys who are all about the team. And I think them joining a nucleus of young, energetic, talented players that had just Mitch getting there last year really solidified things. And I think, you know, in talking about Christian, if you look at how he speaks about himself in the Players Tribune, first thing he does is talk about, you know, Lo Kane. And so, you know, I think that, the tandem and having the pleasure to see them both at the top of the lineup, you know, virtually every night, that's magical. And, you know, importantly, the whole team, you know, Craig has talked to this group of players for a couple of years now, because a lot of the folks in the clubhouse now, you know, Ryan's the only guy here from the 2011 team. I think we showed that in the broadcast the other night. But a lot of these players were here last year, and Craig has, from even the season before that, talked the importance of everybody coming together, the importance of everybody supporting each other. You know, and looking at that clubhouse celebration, nobody was having more fun than Keon Broxton. Nobody has had a better attitude, and really, frankly, in a very tardy way, you know, per amount of time he plays, helps us win more games than Keon Broxton. So all these guys have embraced this part of what Craig's now being part of a family, and that's, you know, that's taken us right now to the, you know, playoffs and second best record in the National League at this moment.
Do you feel like the city feels that also, the excitement?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, first of all, I think on the broadcast the other night, they showed a bunch of the bars. So I know where I would have had more fun in the clubhouse in St. Louis or in one of the bars in Wisconsin that night. And, you know, yeah, I mean, you just got here, you know, due to this injury. But, yeah, I think it's really electric. I think it's really nice. Because we were able to clinch when we did, we have a number of games and days to, you know, have it soak in and enjoy it before, you know, the big game on Tuesday night. If in fact that's the first big game, we know it might not be, but you know, that's a nice thing for the community.
If that's your path, the wild card game, how hard is that going to be? You're talking about Debbie, you know, you're
well,
going into it.
She's
too.
Here now, so
how are you going to sort of navigate?
No matter, I'm just teasing. I mean, it's true. She, you know, she lives and dies with the team, as all of us do. Yeah, look, I remember in 2011 when before Carlos Gomez scored the winning run, we had guys on base. The Diamondbacks had guys on base, and I thought it was K-Rod or Axe who was out there, and everybody's screaming, and she like. Putting her head down. They think they put us on television right then. She like this. And so we can get out of this. We've gotten out of this before. Sort of what I thought about the other night with Taylor Williams when he had the bases loaded. He's got great stuff. He's got to have bases loaded. You know, still get doing it is another thing. So, look, you just have to embrace the moment. The reason these wild card games have such intensity is that they're single elimination. It's the same reason that the NCAAs have such intensity. And I think our guys have really embraced the intensity this month, and they're at home. And as I said on the way here today, and you know, this is, and Craig's been saying for a while, this is all in our control, right? We win, if we win every game from here on out for the rest of the season, we'll be the World Series champ. So we don't have to worry about, you know, the Cubs or the Rockies or the Dodgers or the Cardinals. We have to take care of things ourselves, and we'll be okay.
Unlike 2011, though, you won't be able to jump over the railing this time and go.
Yeah.
Go. You were like the first guy out that year.
That was not planned. We talked about how everything, you know, changes. So, yeah, 2011, when Gomi scored the winning run, I jumped over the rail. And first of all, now we've got a net, so no one is jumping over the rail. I'm on very strict orders on this. But I'll find a way to enjoy it.
You won't be able to sit down there, though, will you, Mark?
I think it's going to be very difficult, and so I'll probably just sit in Suite 8. I think I've got Commissioner Sealing and Sue coming tomorrow night. And this will be a different vantage point to look at some of the games.
Could you talk about your investment in analytics, and do you think it's paid off, and you anticipate more analytics?
Are you talking questions about analytics for our team or,
yeah,
the, or
for
the
your
sport?
Team. For your team.
So one of the reasons, you know, we had a very comprehensive process, one of the reasons David got hired is he had a multifaceted approach to analysis. And I think that has continued, including the importance on scouting. What sometimes scouting gets wrapped into analytics now because, you know, the camera can see more than the eye. So, you know, you can see how many rotations are in a ball, you can track how fast somebody runs. And so video scouting is now an important part of what we do. But I would still say that's scouting. And I still think there's things, you know, Tom was mentioning, you know, Christian Yelich, you know, takes a step from this point in his career to this. Is that because he's, you know, it's just frankly classic change of scenery? Is that because he's at the perfect age where if you're going to make a jump, he does? Is that because he's got, you know, Lorenzo Cain, Ryan Braun, others around him? You know, Ryan, the New York Times wrote a piece about Christian and talking about how we were all coming here for the fan event. So, you know, Christian, 2 days before it was a Marlin, jumps on a plane with me and Ryan and, you know, my son and a couple other people. We pick up, you know, Yuke and Robin Yao. Next thing you know, he's in Brewer heaven. And, you know, Ryan was telling him on that plane, you are one of the 10 best players in baseball. And Ryan doesn't say that lightly. And I'm not sure, you know, there's a lot for Christian to absorb right there, but I think there's no doubt now he's one of the 10 best players in baseball. And so it's really nice to see him mature. We'll continue to refine our process. We'll continue to look. You know, player development is really important also. So, you know, you can get the players that have that aptitude or ceiling, but you have to be able to then develop them. And I think our guys, if anything, are hard on themselves and, well, what could we have done better with, you know, fill-in-the-blank player, rather than saying, oh, gee, well, look what we've done with, you know, Freddie Peralta or whoever.
How important is a season like this with your business partners, you know, with Associated Bank, with the TV and radio partners and everything else?
Well, you know, when we talk about the organization, you know, Craig, from his vantage point, will talk about, you know, everybody who works here. And then, you know, from my standpoint, I think about, you know, our investors, our sponsors, our season ticket holders, our television partners. You know, all the, we have 135 sponsors. You know, this year, the newest and most prominent were Aurora and Johnsonville. You know, our TV ratings are higher. That, you know, Brian Anderson and Rock, you know, do a great job on the broadcast, Matt LaPay. Nuke, obviously, on radio, and so we can communicate the message to our fans. And, you know, for the 11th time in 12 seasons, we've drawn over 2.5 million fans. That's extraordinary support from this community because, you know, this year was terrific and magical so far. Probably magical no matter what happens. But 11 seasons out of 12, there were some tough seasons in there, and there's only once we're below 2.5 million fans. So it's really the whole community and everybody around the team that's made this what it is. And,
Mark,
you know, and then, by the way, a team effort's more fun than an individual effort, so.
Mark, you heard all winter Aldevers need to get starting pitching, and then on July 31st, you heard Aldevers need to get starting pitching. Now you hear, oh, the Brewers in the playoffs, so they don't have enough starting pitching. Is like the joke on everybody else on that, or just how do you look at that? I mean, you guys have said all along you were comfortable with your pitching and you have 92 victories. What can you say about that?
We'll hope it keeps going. you know, one of the beauties of our sport is there's so many different ways to look at it. There's so many different ways to achieve success. And so, you know, among other things, when we looked last year and the second half, you know, our pitching was strong. It was our hitting that was a challenge. And so, but I think, you know, David and Matt Arnold and the group, they really try to take an agnostic approach. I mean, sure, look, David tried to get another starter. Okay, he did, you know, including, and well, we did, when we got Gio. We tried to get Gio actually in a month before, too. And so he, you know, he's always trying to make the team better, even if it's just incrementally better, sort of even inch by inch. So, you know, we'll just hope it continues.
Anybody else?
Where's your pain level on 1 to 10? Doctors love to ask that.
I'm more, the discomfort level at the moment is about a 4.
So, is that because of us or just, you know,
sore, swollen. Yeah, I've learned that pain thing now. I've asked them to describe what it is, and so I know it's not a 9 or 10, it's about a 4.
What was it Wednesday night?
Yeah, it was like a 1. I was feeling no pain on Wednesday night. But if you asked me when the Cardinals had the base loaded, it might have been a different answer. Yeah.
Were you tempted to like put plastic around your living room and spray champagne?
It was really out of body to speed my mom's kitchen. You know, Debbie calling me from the restaurant, I'm coming home right now!
you didn't pour any beer on your mom, did you?
No, we had enough fun watching you get champagne dumped on his head.
Wasn't that amazing?
Wow.
That's all we've got for today, but you know we have more to talk about. We are going to be back in touch with you next week, hopefully chatting about more than just a wild card game and a division, an NL Central game. Of course, the Brewers, if they go 0-2, that'll be it. That'll be the season. But they do have two chances to continue their season beyond Tuesday. The National League Division Series gets underway Thursday and Friday. It'll be off on Sunday, or I should say on Saturday, and then back in action on Sunday at some point in there. We're going to get you another podcast to chat about what we've seen so far and where the Brewers stand, if they are, in fact, still standing. For Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak, thanks for listening. My name again, J.R. Radcliffe. We appreciate all of our listeners on the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. We will catch you very soon.